thing that's happening now is I think there is much more of an attention towards value in the industry. Price ups are, that's Verizon's term, price ups are becoming more the norm, and they're sticking because we're living in a more inflationary environment now. So that's kind of one theme, which is there ever going to be an end to yield declines, and is there ever going to be more profit that'll be able to be emerged from the industry?
Welcome to the 5G Guys podcast, the best resource for newcomers and industry insiders alike to explore not just 5G, but anything technology and telecommunications. We explore and discuss technology with guests of varying backgrounds and expertise to help you learn and stay current. So let's dive right in. Welcome the 5G Guys themselves, hosts Dan McVaugh and Wayne Smith.
Welcome back to the 5G Guys. I'm Wayne Smith with my co-host, Dan McVaugh.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode. It is earnings season. All of the telecom and technology companies are coming out with their earnings reports. And so what better guest to have on than Jim Patterson, repeat guest. We've had him on last time to give us his take from the CES show in Vegas. And so he's going to join us today to give us his input on the highs and lows and takeaways from all of the company's earnings reports. Just a quick background for those that don't know Jim. He's long in the tooth in the telecom industry, just like Wayne and I's 30-plus year veteran. Spent 15 years at Sprint, and then he's also an entrepreneur. He had a startup company that focused on mobile identity that he successfully transitioned out of, and then he now works as an advisory under the Patterson Advisory Group. Is that the right name? Yeah, that's right, Patterson Advisory Group. And so as part of that, he does analyst work. And so that's what he's going to do for us today. So welcome back, Jim.
Thank you. Pleasure to be back.
Yeah. So let's just dive right in. Let's, what are your takeaways? Let's kind of start off on, you know, what you've been seeing in the earnings reports, surprises, highs, lows, whatever.
Well, as most of you know, there were a lot of earnings this week. So you're going to get the abbreviated version. There'll be an unabbreviated version coming out in my blog a week from Sunday. So as Dan mentioned, I kind of write a blog that comes out every other week. And we kind of spice it up or insert every other week with just valuation changes. But there's a lot going on in the industry. And we had earnings from all five of the large telecommunications providers this week. So let me just run through the big themes, if that's okay with you, and then we'll kind of dive into the individuals. I think the biggest theme, and what many analysts were listening for, is, you know, how people are reacting to price. And for those of you who've been around the telecom industry, as Dan, as you mentioned, and Wayne, May will be my 30th year, mark my 30th anniversary in the telecom industry. So been around it a while, know our penchant in the telecom industry to lower price when the going gets rough. The thing that's happening now is I think there is much more of an attention towards value in the industry. And on many of the calls, price ups are, that's Verizon's term, price ups are becoming more the norm. And they're sticking because we're living in a more inflationary environment now. So that's kind of one theme, which is there ever going to be an end to yield declines, and is there ever going to be more profit that'll be able to be emerged from the industry? Not much more. I won't say it's going to be dramatic. You know, you're just happy days are here again kind of thing. But it's not going to be the decline that we've seen in some other industries at other times in the telecom industry. So that's kind of theme one. The second thing that I think everybody caught, especially in the wireless industry, is as the question always is, as C-band deployments, you know, you've moved away from coverage and now you're moving more into density, will the capital spending declines follow? And I think the answer to that is very clearly in the first quarter, specifically with Verizon and AT&T, is yes. And that's a big deal, right? So sometimes we think they're going to fall, they don't fall. Other things happen, there's more spectrum, there's more deployments, there's something else going on. Very clear from both Verizon and AT&T that capital spending is falling. And we'll talk about why it rose with T-Mobile later on in the broadcast. And then I would say the other key theme is what I call deleveraging. So are you paying down your debt? in the case of AT&T, the debt they accumulated through, several acquisitions, DirecTV, Warner Media, and just debt of buying the C-band spectrum. It with Verizon, it's almost entirely the C-band spectrum and associated build-out costs. And the answer to both of those is yes. Now, AT&T is in a little bit higher leverage position than AT&T. AT&T is a little higher leverage position than Verizon, but both are paying down debt, and that's a key focus. So rather than putting that into a new product line or putting that into share buybacks or other things that would, benefit different elements, different choices they can make with it, they're taking that right now to really pay down debt. And that's, I think, in general viewed as a good thing. So if that's okay, those are big themes, I think, so far. I mean, everybody's got their puts and takes. Everything else is a difference. So the key items here, and I'm going to just go in order, almost order of when they announced. Verizon led off the parade with a Monday morning earnings announcement, and it's rare that you have a Monday morning earnings announcement in the telecom industry. So I kind of perked up thinking this was going to be a big announcement from Verizon, and I think it's just they picked Monday morning to do the announcement. It was good. It was definitely a good earnings announcement, not a blockbuster. So they halved roughly their postpaid. This is consumer side. Business has been fairly strong. It was a little weak, but it wasn't. But generally, there's continued strength on business postpaid phones. The consumer postpaid phone business first quarter has always been a challenge for Verizon. Still was not positive, but was they cut the loss in about half. Pressed twice on the call as to whether that meant they were going to be wildly positive in second quarter, and both Hans and their Tony, their CFO, kind of said don't count on it. Mm-hmm. But they didn't say they wouldn't, right? So if it follows kind of the pattern that we see, should see a mild positive. They were certainly they didn't indicate that business had dramatically slowed down. It's getting better. It is clear. If you take away from Verizon on consumer on one thing, it is getting better.
Because just to interject a quick question, for the most part, last year it was a bad year for them, right? In terms of ads, they had some churn, right?
Well, you're always digging out of the ditch, right? If you start in Q1 and you're negative, and they were pretty badly negative, both in Q1 of 2023, and Q1 of 2022. Then you're just trying to get back to parity, back to zero, mm-hmm. right? And that's not where Verizon wants to be. They want to be in a growing position. They didn't invest all the money they're investing in my plan and other things to do, just to get back to zero. So that's a big deal. The other thing I think on Verizon, this goes back to the price hikes, is their price hike didn't really nick the business too badly. Or let me put it this way, they're managing it much better than they have other price hikes. And as I discussed in the brief, it's $1.4 billion in operating income. If everything stood, if there was no churn, probably be a little bit less than that. But the point is that's a big number, and so they have that kind of going for them. And you can see the EBITDA, that's the cash flow margin basically, in the business continuing to grow, and that percentage is continuing to grow. The numbers continuing to grow. Revenues are continuing to grow, but you have to understand that in that number is on top of service revenues is also the wholesale revenues that they get from the cable companies. So it should grow. Now, the point is it growing because of retail business or is it growing because of wholesale? Probably going to be a greater blend, a greater emphasis on retail than before. Consumer prepaid, sticking with the theme of consumer for Verizon, the low light of Verizon was consumer prepaid. So as y'all probably know, they bought TracFone a few years ago, and it's been kind of a rocky integration. I don't think anybody at the company would say it's going smoothly. It's been rough, and the reason why it's rough is it's a much different management technique to manage prepaid, which tends to have a lower quality customer, but. It also tends to have a lower quality device. And I want to kind of bring those two things out because it's important as we talk through prepaid just in general. The cheaper the device, the more service calls you're going to get. The the cheaper the device, the easier it's going to move when the next guy offers you a free device, right? Because they equate new with always being better. You don't see that in the postpaid world, right? Because we're kind of in this Apple, Samsung, maybe a little bit of Pixel sprinkled in there too kind of world. But when you're in the lower end, man, it's those phones are not as durable, right? And so you get a little bit higher churn. And Verizon's churn in prepaid is still very high. And the way I always try to look at it, and again, I used to run an MVNO. So the way you just annualize churn, you say, how many customers, how much do I have to grow? How many customers annually am I going to lose? So if you just annualize churn for Verizon's prepaid, that's a big number. It's 20-some-odd million customers. So they're losing half of those customers, half of that base every year, which means they have to reacquire that, right? That's 10 million customers. So you kind of think about where are all the puts and takes happening. Well, there's 10 million that are walking out the door every single year for Verizon. Many of them are coming back, maybe through another brand, maybe through Verizon Postpaid, whatever it is. But there's a lot going on there in terms of churn. And they got to get that under control. If they don't get that under control, you know, I don't know necessarily if they're ever going to come back and look at the value of the asset that they purchased, but they need to figure out how to manage that base more effectively. Now, what they would say, if they were on the call, was they would say, listen, we're repositioning prepaid into two core brands, that's Visible and Total by Verizon, right? And Visible and specifically Total by Verizon are going to be used as, I'll just call them a bridge brand, so that if you do well enough, you know, you can someday graduate into the family of Verizon Postpaid, and that'd be a great day for you. Jury's still out on both of those. I'll be honest with you. I want to believe Visible's got traction. They didn't give a lot of details. I want to believe Total by Verizon's got traction. They didn't give a lot of details. My friend Jeff Moore over at Wave 7, you know, I think he would say they're certainly not skimping on the investments they're making in trying to build those brands, so that's good news. But they definitely haven't given up on them. But the jury's, I think, still out on the long-term success. So on an outlook basis, the things I kind of am looking for is can they get the positive on postpaid consumer phones? Yes, no. I think the answer is going to be yes. And it certainly is a matter of when, not if. And it is. I think what I would look at least is it a matter of, do we see some surprise in the second quarter? A surprise in the second quarter just for me would be 50,000 or more net adds in the second quarter. I think everybody would be pretty happy. I think the next piece is the lower prepaid losses, and that's much, much, much tougher to predict. But any more visibility they give on Visible and Total and some of the other key brands would be very welcome. I think those are kind of the key things. Business was tough. We knew it was going to be tough. So that's Verizon in a nutshell. Go ahead, guys.
Yeah, Jim. So one of the questions that keeps coming up, and for a lot of different reasons, is the FWA offering, right? And you know, they highlighted, hey, we had more subs. And I think two pieces to that, you know, is this going to continue on? And then as a network provider supplier, how does that affect us? Because it's not a lot of CapEx to deploy FWA. So what do you think about that? And is that a bigger story than they're making it, or is just part of the story?
Verizon, and when you listen to the earnings call, I listened to it a couple times now, they're reading between the lines. I think what they're saying is we have more spectrum to deploy. So the way I look at that is if yields hold, I have no reason to believe they won't, but let's just say it was a $50, $55, $60 price point for a premium broadband product, wireless product. If those yields hold, they'll continue to deploy C-band spectrum as they have it available. So I joke about it, the entire state of Montana could be served five times with all the spectrum they bought out there. I think it's a huge number. But in certain areas, they are, you know, they're not going to be deploying it everywhere, right? And certainly aren't going to be deploying it everywhere for fixed wireless. So It's a little bit different tactic, and we'll talk about T-Mobile in a second. It's a little bit different tactic than T-Mobile, but I think Verizon has a little bit more, because of the One Fiber approach, I think they've got a little bit more runway in the metro areas to go after that market. The question is, should they? And that's a whole, we can just do a whole different session on that, but I think they've got enough to be able to maintain their overall revenue growth to do it. I don't know necessarily that the way they're going about doing it today is necessarily the best long-term use of that spectrum, but it's fine for now. I mean, I don't necessarily say I'd make a dramatically different decision. It's very clear that as much as the cable companies would have you kind of think it's an inferior product, there are certainly a lot of customers that are very happy with it. And the way I divide that, just so you guys know, is if I am dependent on my internet connection to power my 65-inch or larger 4K TV, I'm more disposed to, it's not saying I will always use, but I am more disposed to a fiber connection if I can get it. But if I don't have that available, or I still have linear TV, or I just have over-the-air TV, I don't know that the average run-of-the-mill consumer in those segments really cares. And I said this at a conference back when I was at FastWire in October of last, or 2 years ago. And you know, there's just a segment that use the internet but aren't highly dependent on it for streaming. And if that's the case, T-Mobile and Verizon, even Verizon's LTE product, is probably enough.
Yeah, then there was a Net Promoter Score survey done last year that actually, I think if you guys recall that, that actually came out and showed that the wireless broadband customers way outscored all of the other fixed broadband customers in either category, whether it was cable, DSL, whatever. But to your point, Jim, a lot of that is a little bit deceptive because a lot of those wireless broadband customers don't have another choice or don't have experience with another technology besides the one they're using. So I'm not so sure that's the true picture, but it does. They definitely had the opportunity to say they didn't like it, and they weren't saying they didn't like it.
And for those who have moved to a rural environment and had fiber in the past, the next question would be, if you could get fiber, would you take it? And my guess is for most of fixed wireless, they're going to say, rather have fiber, right? I mean, it depends on how it's distributed, and you know, there's a lot of depends on that, a lot of conditions. But in general, if you have a reliable fiber connection, you want to use fiber, you want to use that to do, and that's not an every time kind of thing, but it's just saying there's more of a disposition to use that if you've had it before.
Got it. Great. Well, great summary of Verizon. Let's move on.
AT&T announced on Wednesday, and I was more surprised by the fact that the street reacted negatively to the report. Not drastically. They're going to do fine this week. I think they're up a little bit today. But the, you know, I kind of they delivered what they said they were going to deliver. So the big headline for me out of there is that they're continuing to deploy broadband. They are on track. I think I calculated by the first quarter of next year, somewhere in there, first, second quarter of next year, they'll hit their 30 million subtotal if they just kind of stay on track with where they are today. So they're well on track to hitting their $30 million nugget, and they're at 40% penetration, meaning where they have deployed fiber, they have 40% penetration. And now that number has been in the 38s and the 37s, but, you know, it's been steadily growing faster. Many of us wish it would grow even faster, but, you know, they are leaving a lot of marketing on the table. But really starting in the third quarter of last year, they started to implement more bundles, saying, if you have us for AT&T Wireless, we will give you an even further discount on your fiber, which was already low priced and already month to month, we will give you an even lower price on your fiber bill if you join us for fiber. It's extremely attractive. And it is a, I'm not going to say it's necessarily always the lowest cost, because I think Charter does have lower cost in some cases, but it is definitely a more attractive bundle than we've seen coming out of AT&T. So they had two things. As y'all remember, they had an outage in the wireless world. It was pretty bad back February. Doesn't look like that had a major impact on churn. So their postpaid churn was at, I think, 0.72. So very nice low churn for the quarter. But really what that's indicative of is the fact that because they didn't have – they had good ads but not great ads. I think they were, what, in the 300s or so for postpaid phone net ads for the quarter. But they're just not adding the gross ads. They're not the place everybody wants to investigate the same way T-Mobile is. So it is less, they are holding on to customers, which I think is probably, which is in line with their strategy. The strategy John Stankey, you know, set out when he came in. The other thing that's interesting, kind of a highlight, is the success so far in its early days, or very early innings, of their fixed wireless product. Again, it's going to be aimed mostly, and they, by the way, they spent a lot of time in their conference call talking about how they're going to segment it, how they're going to be responsible with it. It's a huge caveat. But really, it's aimed towards business customers. And it also said they're not going to price it cheap, right? So I think their entry level is 60. I think their premium product will be 90. I think there'll be a lot of naysayers about whether the premium product actually results in pay for performance. I'm still trying to scratch my head on that one too. On Twitter, for those of you who follow me on Twitter, I'm still scratching my head on that one too. And as are many of the other analysts that that we've had kind of a running conversation on Twitter about. The low light for AT&T was business wireline. Oh, sorry. Let me go back to one other highlight on the AT&T, and wasn't discussed at all. But in, and it'll be on the brief, is when you kind of look to see how Dish is moving customers over. It looks like almost all of Dish's new customers are coming over. So that's the Boost brand, an Infinite brand. That's almost all of the new customers are coming over onto AT&T. So that's a big deal. So AT&T is going to start to see a little bit of a benefit on the wholesale side. A little bit of the incremental growth we see in the second quarter will be coming from wholesale. But that's a pretty big deal. The low lights were really business wireline. When you drop to a 1.3% level operating margin, and that's pretty bad, right? And a lot of questions on it. It's collapsed almost 10 full percentage points, so 1,000 basis points over, I think it's over two years. So I mean, it's a pretty big deal, and revenues are down almost 10% year over year. They said that's the transition away from voice, you know, into other services. But the thing that kind of strikes me, and this is kind of being a telco, a wireline guy, right, is if you think about 1.3% operating margin, and we all know what the operating margins are like for just the access, just the connectivity piece, you're sitting back going, well, God bless, what are they making on the rest of the business? Which means they're not making money on the rest of the business. So you're like, what's going on here? You know, are they comping people wrong? Or they just have a really high cost structure? But that's business wireline. And again, the second piece to that is, yeah, there's some copper in there, but there's a heck of a lot of fiber in there. So the question is, what is this? There's a lot of good diligence that you could do, one could do, on AT&T's small, medium, and enterprise business. And the fact that it manifests itself in a 1.3% operating margin either says operating two networks, a copper network and a fiber network, doesn't have a lot of synergy. And that may actually be true. But it's not the synergy that causes the decline that you see here. And the second thing is how they price in their services, or how dependent are they literally on voice as opposed to just access connectivity? And the question is have they basically lost all the connectivity services to cable? We can talk a bit about cable success in business, which I think is the most underreported story of the past couple of years. Yeah. The outlook for them is they need to show more adoption of residential fiber, and then they need to clearly communicate when they're going to hit the 30 million. So,
yeah, perfect. You know, just one footnote, I guess, to the business side of it. As a business owner, you know, we find ourselves in a different climate. One, you know, does a long-term lease with a lot of space, like we've had in the past, make sense? So we're, you know, just as a footnote for us, we're moving to a co-working, a smaller space, mm-hmm. a third of the lease price. Guess what? Internet and broadband's included in that price.
Yeah.
So we will not be buying business service that we've had for the last 10 years.
And increasingly, when you're making you create a really interesting analogy, and I'll use this in the brief. So I'll credit you on this. That where you are losing in the mover environment in residential, right? Because that's slowed mm-hmm. because mortgage rates are in the mid sevens now, mm-hmm. and just people can't afford to move, right? You're making up in the increased restacking. I think that was the term our real estate group used at Sprint. The restacking of the entire business and office environment, which is actually resulting in potentially some more wins, I think, for cable, or at least cable and other alternatives. And as you said, maybe an entirely lower total need for bandwidth because I'm aggregating three or four accounts before into one co-working space where before I had, they were separate.
Yeah, and we were using, you know, broadband as an office environment, but on top of that, we were paying for cellular. Mm. So now we found that the cellular solution, even in hotspots, you know, using the hotspot on your phone, is more productive and cost effective than having a Wi-Fi hotspot. And so business is definitely changing to meet the demands and, you know, make it more fluid. So I think that's part of it. You know, it's just, we just don't need long-term commitments.
And that's a big deal. Services. That's a big deal. We didn't talk anything about Verizon, AT&T, and I'll talk more about it in the brief about you know, upgrades and all the things that are going on in the upgrades. I'm not trying to diminish that. And they were low, and that's a benefit. What I will highlight, just so everybody, is that the expectations for T-Mobile and for AT&T were that net additions would be harder to come by. We all forget about what happened in the fall of 22 and the first quarter of 23, which was we had these strikes in China and impacted Foxconn. We all forget about what happened in November, which resulted in some delays, and we pushed a lot of the net adds into 1Q23. We didn't have that problem this cycle, so we got a lot in 4Q, and 4Q looks awesome. 1Q is going to be a little weaker. The comparison's harder. So the fact that AT&T actually churned out, and not churned out, but added customers, and as many as they did, is actually not a bad sign. They didn't really talk about the whole Apple thing because it might have been minor, but Verizon should have struggled because Verizon took extraordinary measures to make sure everybody got a phone in the fourth quarter of 2022. And so should have struggled because their first quarter was more normal than the other two carriers. And it's interesting because Verizon's got materially better, right? At least their losses got less. AT&T, although, also did fairly well. And I'm surprised T-Mobile didn't really kind of make more attribution in their thing. We'll get into T-Mobile here in a second. But the attribution there. So just to go, let's move on to T-Mobile, if that's okay. You guys got any more questions on AT&T? So T-Mobile was very interesting, right? Because they do the news release in the morning about Lumos, and we could do a whole 30 minutes on Lumos and why people like it, why people don't like it. But I'll be honest with you, if T-Mobile's going to make a move, and remember, they're owned by the Germans, right? So let's not make any pretenses here. They're not owned by they're owned by a sole investor who has 50-some-odd percent control of the company. Everybody else along for the economic ride. And so Germany kind of has to lay blessing to that. Well, Germany wants their dividend, right? They want their stock price appreciation. They got to support what is their own, you know, core Deutsche Telekom company. So they don't want to see dramatic – they don't want to see uncertainty or dramatic things. T-Mobile is making a very low investment. I think there was a lot made of the headline about them getting into it, and I wish they had prepped better for answering the questions on the call. I'll be honest with you, I don't think they did as much prep as they should have. But really, this is their chance to kind of trial in a live environment and not have to blame it on the fact it's a startup, right? Because we all know the issues of doing greenfields, right? And there could be a million things that could happen in greenfields. But they're starting with Lumos, which is already an established, it's an upgrade process, but it's an established company with established profits. The way they're changing the company, which I think a lot was made of this that probably isn't as relevant, but they're going to open up the company to other providers. Well, everybody has a wholesale business, except maybe Charter, right? You know, significant wholesale business where they open it up to others. But I think what you'll see out of T-Mobile is a real example of, and it's not just to get regulatory approval. I think this is kind of where they are in their core, of really opening up rural America for many opportunities, and they're doing that not only to dissuade large. You know, you can't have, how many competitors can you have in Winchester, Virginia? I mean, let's be realistic. Do I need more than two? Might need two, but do I need more than two in fiber providers in Winchester? Probably not. But they're also doing that in a manner that moves those customers over from the Lumos brand to T-Mobile, which I think will be an enormous benefit for them on the wireless side. I think just from a store efficiency perspective, you basically take all of Lumos's, what little they were doing on the retail side, because it's not a major cost component for them, and you reduce that down to very small number. So anyway, that was the lead, and that was kind of the cloud that hung over it all. And there are things on YouTube. It's worth watching. And they had a decent quarter. The analyst consensus were growing and getting higher as their earnings release came up, especially after Verizon's announcement. But I think they had a very fine, solid quarter. They are clearly benefiting from the Sprint acquisition. I hate to say that every time I come on, I talk about what a brilliant acquisition that was. But remember, they don't have the C-band debt that Verizon and AT&T have. There was a large equity component in what they did when they bought Sprint, and everybody benefited from that, right? And as a result, the company's doing pretty well. The one low light. There's a lot of good stuff in the T-Mobile report. The one low light was retail prepaid. And I haven't had a chance to dig into it. I can't go into all the reasons why. I don't even know if I... But what was interesting was before earnings release, they announced a change in the migration from prepaid to postpaid, which is rather than on straight credit check, if you've been a T-Mobile customer for prepaid retail customer for 12 months and you've made 12 months of payments, you are now automatically eligible for the benefits as if you were for the postpaid customer benefits. So Netflix and Paramount and other things. I'm sure there's still a credit check on some part of some business and some incremental spend, but their change to that, I think, now kind of makes a little bit more sense. When you look back and say, and you just never see a lot of negatives ever on T-Mobile, but when you saw it, kind of, I think it was down 20. I'll correct that if it's wrong, guys. But I think it was down 20,000, and but postpaid was up, I think, 532. So, it was a good, solid quarter for them. The thing I love to emphasize in the brief is we just look at free cash flow. There's less merger noise and less merger costs every quarter. It's absolutely a wonderful place to be. They just got to do a better job of articulating their fiber strategy and their fixed wireline strategy going forward.
So question I have is, so historically, when I worked at the carriers and, you and I were both at Sprint at the same time for a little while, going back to the 90s, prepaid always was the most difficult part of our business as a wireless carrier. That's nothing new, right? And I'm speculating, big speculation here, but here in these earnings reports, we hear all three, AT&T, T-Mobile, and Verizon, struggling on their prepaid business in their report. Is this possibly a little canary in the coal mine about the general economy as a whole, or is it just more of the same?
Because
good question.
The other side of this is you have gains in Comcast, you have gains in Charter, right? So you have a little bit of noise in the COVID world where some of us had phones, you know, who were working in an office environment, now basically had your business number forwarded to a mobile phone because that whole thing. Again, that's noise. Verizon, as you know, added a second line product. I think that's noise. I think they said that too on their call. No, I don't think that. Let me put it this way. I think economic conditions will have to get much worse, and then you'll start to see those declines. I'm not predicting that they're going to happen, but I'm not predicting that. And many of the analysts, but specifically Craig Moffitt and Moffitt Nathanson, he's made a lot of comments about how phone growth, so prepaid plus postpaid, has been growing far faster than the population as a whole. And there's some noise in there, just, you know, different tactics around when disconnects happen and other things. And you got to look at everybody in the prepaid space, not just the majors, to kind of see what's going on there. But no, I don't think that's canary in a coal mine yet. And I don't necessarily think that one's going to be the whammy for the industry. Except in the context, let me be a big except in the context of ACP, right? Now that's more on the data side than on the voice side, you know, so, but ACP, right, which was a topic on every call, ACP has mixed impact. The greatest impact, and we'll talk about here in a second, is on Charter, but it's a mixed impact to the carriers. So sure. I actually think it'll be beneficial for one or two. And not quite sure how much I want to say it's beneficial to them, but I think it's beneficial to one or two going forward and harmful to the others.
Let's explain ACP for the audience that may not know that.
Affordable connectivity program. There was an earlier program during COVID that gave up to $50, and I'm going to exclude tribal, but for a second, but $50 to folks who met certain income thresholds. And then the affordable connectivity program was $30. So it's basically a subsidy or discount that the government pays the carrier if for every qualified customer that they have. And the carrier makes sure that every customer that they put on that particular plan is qualified and no more. And it's you know, there's a lot of politics around it. It certainly is more efficient and less fraught with, let's just say, fraud issues, than we saw in, you know, 10 years ago when there was a wireless program, kind of a wireless lifeline program that was offered. But, and again, that got better over time. This one started pretty good and has been efficient overall. There's a lot more to do on it, and there's a whole different one we can have just on affordability and how broadband and BEAD and other things can be more affordable to folks. This is a bigger debate, and where more leadership is needed on the part of the FCC to say, are we gonna subscribe to universal service, and does that include data? And if it includes data, are we gonna align the subsidies accordingly to include?
Right.
To include.
So is announced.
I don't know if it will.
Right. So ACP is being sunsetted, or that's just been announced recently, and so
that's full month for April, partial month for May. So right. You wouldn't see, as I say, and Dan, you wouldn't see those numbers coming off until the second quarter.
Right.
We'll see how many come off. My guess is there'll be a lot less coming off than people expect, because it is an important service, and it's especially on the home internet side through either fixed wireless or through a cable or through a fiber provider, it's managed much differently than how the traditional wireless, you know, free wireless phones, free wireless service were managed in the past.
Yeah, I want to jump in there for a minute. You mentioned the FCC, so I have to ask, are we going to see an impact from the recent change to net neutrality and the other changes that the FCC has mandated for DEI? Do you think that impacts the carriers? Because, you know, they were putting up a pretty big fight about it, and now that they're back.
So when we were starting the year,
Yeah.
We were talking about the most important events. And I put in there the approval of and appointment of Ana Gomez to be the fifth commissioner. So you kind of had these tie votes and not a lot was getting done. And now administration is pushing very hard for various changes. I wrote about it last week in the brief. I'm hopeful, and I should say it this way. I think the facts today show that bandwidth is growing at a fast enough rate across all connections that the concept of having a lot of constraints in bandwidth it's just happening less and less. And I was there during the worst of it, and in the middle of it, through 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011, and 12, there were some real constraints, right? Because you had constrained 3G and 4G, you had constrained DSL, you had constrained coax, right? Just as they were making changes too. And everybody was going through it, and there were a lot of now very, very large companies making the case that there was some malevolence on the part of the carriers. And there may have been, right? I'm not saying there wasn't, but there may have been. But it certainly wasn't as much as they made it out to be. Nor do I think that the net neutrality requirements that are in place today or whatever they voted on yesterday and approved, nor do I think that those are going to make significant impacts. I don't think it's going to have a significant benefit to all but a handful of customers.
Well said. That was a question I've been thinking about.
I'll just give you an example. This is actually a pretty good one. My former employer, Fastwire, has deployed fiber in the fine town of Sedalia, Missouri. Right? You probably never heard of Sedalia, but it is a county seat of Pettis County. It is a great town. It used to be the end of one of the railroads. Right? So I mean, it has a great history. And let's say it's 8,000 to 10,000 homes passed. Prior to 2 years ago, the only choice in town of for anything that was broadband was Spectrum. And Spectrum did what they could. They were basically the monopoly. I'm sure they had 60, 70% market share, maybe even higher in Sedalia. And there was a little bit of AT&T DSL because Spectrum wasn't out there and they were slow rolling their growth. Fast forward 2 years. Fastwire is there. Socket, to some extent, is there, on the fringes at least, if not, and probably going to grow into there. AT&T is deploying fiber there. And guess what? Spectrum is gonna end up upgrading their network there. So let's say the average, and I'll just tell you that right now, and this is regular retail price, month-to-month, no contract, gig is $49. For Fastwire, 2 gig is either 69 or 79. I mean, I don't know where you go with that on affordability, but assuming they keep their oversubscription low, where's the net neutrality issue there? There isn't going to be one, right? So will there be one in the very, very, very hinterlands where now that you have a choice of fixed wireless or others? Perhaps. But what is that hindering? Sorry, this is a whole different discussion. But what is that hindering? That is hindering your ability to converge video and internet. So with the FCC and kind of where they're at on it, they want everybody to have zero latency at all times. I think that's if they could wave the magic wand and have 1 gigabit download speeds for every customer in the United States, that's great. We don't have the money to do that. Let's be very blunt. And there isn't enough private investment to do it, especially when you're only passing 10 homes in a mile. So let's get real and have a conversation about how we best manage how entertainment is consumed and whether we're pursuing the most efficient means to consume that entertainment. And then the other piece on this is, given the fact, and y'all know, and kind of we always lead in the Sunday brief with, we have something called the Fab Five, which is Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, Google, and Meta, right? And the relative value of those companies relative to AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, Comcast, and Charter, right? So There was a time 10 years ago, 12 years ago, when the cumulative valuations of those two companies was relatively similar. Maybe plus my, maybe the Fab Five was $100 billion greater, right? Now you're at the point where the Fab Five are worth, you know, like $10 trillion, and the telco top five telco guys are low. So there's like a 13, 14 times difference now, where before it was measured in a 1 point something times. So I think the FCC's, if they were objective, would sit back and say the users of the internet network now need to start contributing. If you want this 1 gigabit goal, they need to start contributing towards the payment of that 1 gigabit goal. And that, again, for rural only, I don't necessarily slap it on everybody. But if we want universal service, the people that should pay for it are those that are forcing, that are, and I think it's a good thing, but that are forcing the transition from linear to packet. And let's make sure that the people who are providing those quality services to customers have enough money to continue to provide those with quality, whether it's by wireless or whether it's by wireline.
Right.
So sorry, that's a big editorial.
No, it's great. It's a great point. And we're absolutely going to leave it in, because for consumers and listeners of the podcast, we all get kind of frustrated. We scratch our head when we look at our wireless bill and we see 50 different lines of fees and taxes and universal service funds. And well, those are the line items that the government has the carriers put in to fund things like these subsidy programs we're talking about and the different things that they're doing in telecom. And your point is a very valid one, is why wouldn't the content providers that really are the reason why these networks have to be subsidized play a role and share in that? And so I agree with you. And I think that, yeah, the only downside really is our bill for any of those content providers, if we have one at all, might have a new line item on it. That's right. but at the end of the day,
there's so much that world is so twisted too. And it's a totally separate world from telecom. Right. And just the whole mismanagement of the role of streaming. And I constantly ask my analyst friend, who is the adult in the room here?
Yeah.
And, I'm not quite sure who it is some days. I think most days it's Comcast is the adult in the room. But speaking of which, let's go on into Comcast earnings, if that's okay.
Yeah,
and so Comcast didn't have a lot of good stuff to talk about. They had some growth in mobile. I got to give them that. They had decent growth, I think, in this is on the communication side, a decent growth in business side. Right, so the whole Masergy acquisition seems to be going well, and margins, I still think their EBITDA margins are very, very good. And of course, theme parks were a big discussion, and kind of NBC Universal and their political advertising, all the other things, the things that happen in a large conglomerate, which is Comcast. And in Comcast, the only telco we have to talk about constant currency with, because of the growth of the value of the British pound and Sky and what that impacts. But if you kind of pull back to domestic communication services, business was a highlight. That was about it. It really wasn't. There were a lot of lowlights. They basically got on and said, hey, we lost customers, and we're probably going to lose customers for the foreseeable future. And we're going to lose potentially some more customers because of ACP, but they don't have a lot of exposure. But they have some, but definitely not as much as Charter, who we'll talk about next. So I actually, you know, Comcast used to be one of my favorites. It's been replaced by Verizon. And Verizon and T-Mobile seem to be the ones that are kind of, you know, hottest on the trail of creating value, and will continue to do it. I think the manifestation of Comcast, and it's an interesting, and I'll bring this up in my write-up next Sunday, is they have had 8 consecutive quarters of lower customer relationships. And that's a big deal. That's not, hey, we just woke up and found out we're going to be losing customers. They have 8 consecutive quarters of lower customer relationships. And in the first quarter, they lost 94,000 customer relationships. Over the last 8 quarters, they've lost 400,000 customer relationships. So again, what a customer relationship loss means is not a loss of a revenue generating unit. It's the loss of that home. So the way to think about it is, I have an investment, probably a coax investment, into that home. I now no longer have any revenue to generate cash to cover my investment. They may have already covered it previously, but kind of the big deal about cable was they were going to have multiple revenue generating units going into the home. And as a result of having multiple revenue generating units, they were going to pay off their capital that they had to spend to put in DOCSIS 3.0, 3.1, whatever. They were going to pay it off faster. And that anything new was going to be incremental. Now, $400,000 doesn't sound like a lot, but if they start losing $400,000, that's over 2 years. If they start losing it every year, that's a big deal. And that, again, relationships equate to used to have revenue in the home, now no longer have revenues in the home. And that's net of anything new that they've added. And before, they've been able to add some new homes, and they lose a few, but they add a few. In this case, there's just not a lot coming in the door because their movers are way down, new home builds are down. So and even when they do have new home builds, they now have more competition from predominantly AT&T, but also other fiber providers. My outlook, my big question mark on Comcast is, will they ever be able to grow as fast, their mobile business, as fast as Spectrum? And I'll talk about this. This one will be definitely on the topic for, and remember, Comcast and Spectrum, they're not exactly the same number of homes passed, but they're both very big. And to have Comcast add roughly, let's say 60% of the net adds in the first quarter compared to Charter, Spectrum, whatever you want to call them, that's a pretty big difference. And I believe that Spectrum is now, 20% or so larger in terms of an embedded base. So it's a head scratcher. And the logic goes like this. If a bundled wireless plus internet customer has material churn benefits to the business, and you're not spending money on building that relationship as a franchise, and their penetration is in my opinion, still very paltry, especially in terms of the number of homes passed, then what are you doing? What are you thinking, right? And that, to me, is a far bigger question to be asking for in terms of value creation than why did T-Mobile spend, $1 or $2 billion on Lumos, right? I think this is the more fundamental question is, can Comcast ever grow mobile as well as and as strong as their peers over at Spectrum? And I don't know the answer to that question. I think there needs to be some soul searching at Comcast to kind of figure that out.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. Wayne and I were both at a conference this week, and the room was mostly service providers that build and operate these networks for all of these carriers in one form or another, construction companies and the like. And the question about Comcast in particular came up in the room about, the spectrum that they've bought, that they hold on to, and will they ever start building their own networks? And, and we all speculated about what that means. I guess, they have a pretty big embedded capital investment in that spectrum. So they're going to have to figure this out sooner or later, because they either have to put that to work or they have to do something with that asset. I speculated that they would, but it wouldn't be a build out like we're used to. It would just be an additional spectrum that they could use in their embedded networks to target hotspots of usage for their broadband customers, that in the same way that they're trying to use mobile. But to your point, if they're not really utilizing mobile effectively that way today, why would they double down on that? So it'll be really interesting to keep an eye on.
I think there's a lot of things. We can do a whole section just on Comcast, right? I mean, and there's a lot of things that they could do with it. History would say they're not going to build it out. History would say that's not going to happen. However, let's move on to Spectrum. Spectrum, if it were up to Spectrum, they would have already built out a lot of the C-band already, right? They would have done more. What's interesting, just to do the bridge here, Comcast had a major announcement about prepaid, which we'll start to see the manifestation of in the second quarter. And the question is, how does that manifest itself? Was it prepaid only to kind of cover you know, ACP winners, you know, try to pick up some incremental ACP. I don't know. I don't know whether that's going to, I don't know what that's going to mean. But what it said to me was everybody sees an opportunity here, and Comcast is going to go after it a little bit more aggressively than they had previously. And it'll be interesting to see kind of how that transitions. Meanwhile, you had Charter report, and they were the last. They reported this morning. So it was a pretty muted report. I think Chris and Jessica, Chris Winfrey, their CEO, Jessica is their CFO. I think very, very good, you know, good and frank, candid kind of understanding where the business is. But the business isn't in great shape. As my Craig Moffett said, it's always darkest before the dawn, and his comment was, "Boy, is it dark!" Right, and I think that's Craig is very accurate and very on topic on most things, and I would say that's probably pretty much where they are. They had a tough quarter on residential. They continue to increase their focus on. They post a thing in their earnings tables about what percentage of their customer base is on one product or more. I think right now it's between 47-48%. But at the same time, they post this awesome number on mobile. So, and I think you all saw what they're doing with anytime upgrades. Those aren't moves out of desperation. Those are moves because they actually understand, and because they're big enough now, they really understand the segments and they understand how to move the needle as they move upstream. And Charter's moves upstream, Spectrum Mobile, moves upstream are really, really exciting to watch, and I think will be actually very interesting as they do that. The other thing that we don't really have a lot of time, and I don't have a lot of information yet to kind of share with you, but watch what's going on with Xumo, right? So, I mean, we didn't talk about Peacock and you know, kind of things are going on there, but watch what's going on with this cable product and watch how that's changing things at both Charter and Spectrum. I think those are the only two that are public that we can kind of talk about kind of what's going on there. But they haven't given up on video, that's for sure. And they're getting to a more efficient product. And Spectrum, as you guys know, launched a lower end product for $40 a month, which has been super great for them so far. Now, again, that's another one you got to watch with them. But I think, again, and the other thing to say for Spectrum is they haven't lost as many customer relationships, but they did lose 215,000, you know, residential customer relationships this quarter. So that's a pretty big number, right? So that's again, when you lose a customer relationship, you're losing the house, and that's a pretty big move away from Charter, and you know, I think that's something they have to watch. I think overall. And maybe this is related to just the fact that Charter has a little bit more debt than and less of a conglomerate than Comcast overall. You know, they're getting whacked a little bit more. You know, they're a little more of a pure play, so to speak, on the communication side. But I'm telling you, just from the earnings call and I think kind of where everything is, Charter definitely seems to know how to get out of the ditch. I'm not quite sure about their friends over at Comcast. It just wasn't clear from the call that they know how to do it. One more note on Charter. ACP, most dependent. So definitely going to have the most noise on ACP with Charter. Mm-hmm. But very little in the mobile side. But they're going to have, there's going to be more noise over the second and third quarter. But you have to kind of look underneath that and just say, what's going on in the core? Can they maintain the core? Are they able to make the upgrades, what's called high split upgrades, and eventually DOCSIS 4.0 upgrades to make that happen? I don't see any reason why Charter. The nice thing about being a pure play is, you know, you can't be unfocused on the basics. I mean, they only have a couple things to focus on, and it's not saying it's that simple because they've got to focus on it across a wide, wide, wide variety of areas, wide variety of competitors as a result. But, you know, if Charter executes that, then it could be a really interesting battle royale to watch, say, in a Dallas or San Antonio or an Austin between them and AT&T.
Yeah. I was going to comment that it was interesting that you made the comments about Charter's perspective position in mobile compared to Comcast. And I was just having a conversation with somebody this week about the fact that, being able to see behind the curtain a little bit, Charter has had three dedicated mobile wireless business units for a long time. I'm talking like 10 years. I have several people I've worked with in my career that have been over there for a long time. This has been a part of their strategy. This isn't something new. And they've been building a strong foundation about what they're going to do. Now, what does that mean in terms of what they're going to do? I don't know. But all I can say is they've got a lot of talented people over there that have been really focused on mobile for quite a long time. And so it doesn't surprise me to start hearing things like your comment about they seem better positioned, because I think they've been really working on it. And really, it's not been, I don't know that Comcast has been more reactive or later to the game in terms of understanding mobile and building teams around mobile, but it sure appears that way to me.
Yeah, Spectrum, Danny Bowman's now head of all product. He's obviously knew him from Sprint and Nextel days. I mean, Danny's an entrepreneur. He's not a bureaucrat. He really isn't. And under him is David Owens, who I worked with at Sprint, and under him is Gavin Throckmorton, who's been around the industry but was at one time at Sprint. These guys know their stuff. They're not reinventing anything, and they really understand that. All those guys have really sought to understand the cable industry as well. So I think as an MVNO, right, they're doing extremely well relative to anybody else who's an MVNO in the marketplace. Really well. I think the question is there enough capital? Is there enough conviction? You know, because remember, they're spending capital on rural as well. So is there enough capital for them to do more than just a trial of C-band? And if there is, look out.
Wow. That's a lot to take in.
I was going to say, we ran way over, guys. So...
It's an important topic. You know
why the brief is never brief,
right? Well, we'll as always, Jim, we'll put links in the show notes to you and your website, to your briefs around these topics, so that people can go read more about it. You're a great resource. I think you always give a fresh and unique perspective on it. Yeah. So thanks again for being on. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah.
Terrific show. Thanks again.
All right, thanks, Jim.
Thanks for listening to the 5G Guys. For more resources and to connect with Dan and Wayne, check out their website at 5gguys.com. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to hit that follow button and share this episode with your friends and family.